I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. A Boeing 737 MAX plane operated by Delta Airlines made an emergency landing on Saturday night at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. The plane took off from Denver. According to CBS, the plane descended to a lower altitude out of an abundance of caution to evaluate a potential maintenance issue. Luckily, no one was harmed. Secretary of State Antony Blinken had to change plans yesterday after an Air Force C-40 jet, a modified version of the Boeing 737, developed unspecified problems. CNN reports this is the second time this year that Blinken has had an issue with a Boeing plane while traveling. In January, when he was about to return from Switzerland, the same model of plane suffered what the traveling press was told was a critical failure related to an oxygen leak, and he was forced to fly home in a smaller jet. These latest incidents once again put Boeing in the spotlight as the reports of safety issues with the 737s and institutional failures across the company continue. Last week, several top officials at Boeing announced they would step down, including CEO Dave Calhoun. Yahoo News reports that most of Dave Calhoun's stock and options vest and expire in the future. Based on the current stock price, Calhoun could rake in $19 million in payouts over 10 years from just two sets of shares after he leaves the company. Also, Stan Deal, the head of the division that makes planes for airlines and other commercial customers, said he would step down, and Boeing board chair Larry Kellner will also not seek re-election, according to the New York Times. Joining us to talk about all of this and what it will take to hold the world's largest aerospace company accountable and ensure flying is safe are two guests. Ed Pearson is executive director of the Foundation for Aviation Safety. He's former senior manager at Boeing 737 factory, where he was responsible for production system support for 737 commercial planes and the military version of the 737. Ed Pearson raised concerns to his supervisors about the unstable production environment and risks to the safety of airplanes. He says the factory was plagued with overworked employees, chronic part shortages, quality issues, and unrelenting schedule pressure to deliver MAX planes. Ed Pearson recommended Boeing leadership shut down production operations before fatal crashes, but he was ignored. After the crashes, he implored the leaders of the NTSB, the FAA, and the DOT to conduct a thorough investigation of the factory and to involve international accident investigators, but he was ignored again. He shared his story with U.S. Congress. In turn, Congress directed the FAA to conduct a proper investigation. Instead, the FAA focused on helping Boeing recertify the airplane. Hi, Ed. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Maureen Tasek, investigations editor at the American Prospect and senior fellow at the American Economic Liberties Project. You can find Maureen's latest piece, Suicide Mission, What Boeing Did to All the Guys Who Remember How to Build a Plane, at yourcallradio.org. Hi, Maureen. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Privileged to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. And if you have any questions about what is happening with Boeing and safety, any questions at all? So many more people are flying today than ever before. So what steps are you taking? If you find out that you're flying a 737, what questions do you have about that? Recently, there were reports that if you do make a reservation, various airlines are giving you an option to let you know what plane you will be flying on. And in some cases, you can say you do not want to fly on a Boeing 737. So if you have any questions, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Ed, let's start with you. Thanks again for joining us. It's hard to keep up with all of this. I just got some breaking news over the last 3 weeks about how planes had to land where they were not supposed to land because of issues with a Boeing 737. So can you bring us up to speed? What are your thoughts about these cases still happening?
Well, it's a lot more complicated, I think, than people may realize. One of the challenges is that the airplanes have an incident and there's all automatically, hey, this is a Boeing plane. You know, there's there's a lot of confusion because people don't know the differences between the different model planes. But they sometimes will automatically assume that this is a Boeing issue when it, in fact it could be, or it could also be a maintenance issue. It could be a pilot error issue. The main point is that our aircraft, our aviation system is under tremendous pressure. I mean, there's a lot of people that obviously want to fly, my family is included. There's opportunities to improve our economy. And unfortunately, we have, with all these pressures, we have this tendency to make shortcuts or to downplay things that are significant warning bells, alerts that should cause us to pause and really reassess what's going on. I mean, you've heard this phrase before that the U.S. has the gold standard in aviation, but I'm afraid that it's melting right now, and we need to take all these warnings, all these things as early warnings and precursors. We need to address these things and not just ignore them and say that everything's fine, because it's not.
So, Ed, for those of us who fly, I mean, I'm sure other people feel the same way. When you get on an airplane and you take off, it's still amazing to me that this is even possible, that we can fly from point A to point B all, you know, around the world. How should we think about safety at this point?
Well, first of all, you shouldn't have to worry about those things. I mean, you should be able to just buy your ticket, get on the plane, you know, take your seat, have an enjoyable flight. You shouldn't, in today's day, be worried about that. I mean, our foundation gets inundated by people that are traveling that are like, hey, I'm flying this kind of plane. Is it safe? What do you think? And there's no easy answer because, again, every plane is unique. It's unique in their design and how it's manufactured, how it's operated, how it's maintained. And so consumers need to just realize that, unfortunately, the trust that we have in our government agencies and also in Boeing has faltered significantly. And this isn't to say that we can't get back to where we were. I mean, you know, I have a total support, you know, total belief that the Boeing company is capable. I know the employees of Boeing. I know they're capable of doing amazing things. They built planes for, you know, over 100 years and high quality. So the company has the ability to do that in terms of the people. The leadership is a mess, and the leadership has been a mess for a while. And like any organization, you can have a great leader, and then you replace it with a person, and then everything can go downhill. We've all seen that. And there's a lot of talk about, you know, the McDonnell Douglas merger and how significant it was on the company. And I wasn't there then. That was many years before I was there. But I will tell you that from my position, I believe these are just leadership failures at all levels. I mean, not just at the very top of the company, but, you know, if you work in a factory and you know that you're supposed to do your work a certain way and you take a shortcut because you yield to pressure, I mean, that's part of the problem. So we need to get back to understanding that we're building these planes. These are life support systems. I mean, people are, you know, trusting their lives in them, and we need to deal with these things very seriously. And we're not, one of the frustrations that I have and people I work with have is there's always these downplaying of these incidents. You just gave examples after, you know, several examples. These incidents are supposed to be investigated. They're supposed to be thoroughly identify the root causes, and they're supposed to fix them. And the FAA has been failing at this. The FAA has not been thoroughly investigating and getting to the bottom of these things. We're seeing recurring failures on airplanes, on new planes that shouldn't have these problems. And so it is concerning. And my main point is, you know, we cannot maintain a high level of safety if we allow this attitude that all these things are no big deal, you know, oh, it's no big deal. And anybody that's done accident investigations or flown, I flew in the military, and anybody who's been around airplanes for any length of time knows that these mistakes can add up and they can cause tragedies.
So given that you're talking about the fact that this has to do with executives and people who are at the top, but also under the people at the top. How far back do we need to go? Because New York Magazine has a piece by Jeff Weiss, The Boeing Nosedive, a once venerable company turned its soul over to shareholders and courted disaster. And according to this report, in 2005, Boeing brought in a new CEO, James McNerney. And this piece says, to support its share price, the company under McNerney poured billions into stock buybacks instead of investing profits into the kind of research and development needed to stay competitive. McNerney decided not to spend billions building a new plane to replace the 737. Instead, Boeing tweaked and updated the existing model and called it the 737 MAX, outfitting it with larger, more efficient engines for increased economy. Compensating for the resulting instability was a secretive automated system called MCAS that would adjust the plane's pitch without input from the pilot. McNerney also fought to deeply cut costs. On his watch, the company opened its first non-unionized aircraft production line and initiated a program called Partnering for Success that pushed suppliers to cut their prices by 15% or more. Many feared that squeezing suppliers would harm the quality of their components, but McNerney was determined to recoup the cost of the 787's development. There's just so many details in here. So what are your thoughts on this? I mean, how far back do we have to go? We learned that McNerney retired in 2015, handpicking his successor, President and COO Dennis Muilenburg.
Well, I really don't know how far back you have to go. I worked in three different organizations when I worked at the Boeing company. And the first organization I worked in was a software development in support of the 87 program. And I was appalled at what we saw in terms of promises made that software was going to be developed and it wasn't done in time, and just huge pressure. And then I went into the flight test and evaluation organization. And it was a night and day difference. That organization was really well done, well run. And then I went into the factory and unfortunately, you mentioned the issues that we saw in the factory. So, you know, from my vantage point, it comes down to individual leadership, right? I keep pointing this out because people want to like pick a point in time and say, oh, the company was great until this happened. And the company was great until this happened. And, you know, heck, a large number of employees that work at the company now weren't even born when the merger with McDonnell Douglas occurred in 1997. But the cost cutting that you refer to is a problem, because it really should be, you know, what's the best, safest way to build the plane? What's the highest quality? And yeah, it's going to cost money to do that, but you build a high quality product and the safety will absolutely go with it. And so, and the profits as well. But when you're fixated on finances, which I have to agree, that is something that has been, apparently, a problem that wasn't there many, many years ago. When you fixate on that and you put pressure on your production system to produce these airplanes, employees get the wrong message of what the priorities are. So instead of the priority being, hey, this plane has to be the top quality and everything perfect, I mean, perfect, which is what you would expect as a passenger and as a flight crew, the pressure is, hey, we got to get that plane out. It's due to be delivered today. It's got to get out today. You know, is a recipe for people taking shortcuts, people making mistakes, just like we saw in the Alaska airline accident.
Ed Pearson is executive director for the Foundation for Aviation Safety and a former senior manager at Boeing 737 factory, where he was responsible for production system support for 737 commercial planes. He has spoken out about a number of safety problems, but has been ignored by Boeing and federal government agencies. Ed will be with us for 10 more minutes. So if you have any questions for him about what he experienced while working at Boeing, and then the work that he's doing today to ensure that flying is safe, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We're also joined by Maureen Tasek, investigations editor at the American Prospect. Maureen, we're going to talk about your piece's suicide mission after the break. But in the meantime, you've written two in-depth pieces about Boeing. What do we need to know about the corporate culture at Boeing, and again, the need to ensure that the stock price goes up, that the profits constantly go up, and what resulted as a result? What happened as a result of that?
I think that one of the most important distinctions to make is between earnings and extractions. And because you look at what Boeing has done over the past few decades, and it doesn't make sense. Every move that they have made to cut costs has ended up backfiring spectacularly. With the 787, they only wanted to spend something like $7 billion on its development. They tried to force their suppliers to design large chunks of the airplane, suppliers that in many cases did not even have engineering departments of their own. This business model, it ended up costing something like $50 or $60 billion the plane was 3.5 years delayed, very soon after its first deliveries. It was grounded for a few months because of a spate of battery fires. This is all before the 737 disaster that killed 346, I believe. So you have to understand that this isn't your, you know, traditional capitalist concept of earnings. The CEO, Dave Calhoun, he is a guy who came, you know, he was a Jack Welch protege. He came from GE, but he also importantly came from Blackstone. The private equity business model relies on using debt financing to, you know, pay your bills or pay for a company, and then taking some of that money, the debt that you float, and giving it to yourself. So in the case of in Boeing's case, yes, they spent a lot of money on stock buybacks. Where did they get that money? In many cases, they floated debt to finance stock buybacks and dividends. I've seen this across all industries, right? And it doesn't, it's not, in my view, and maybe I'm traditional, this isn't earnings, this isn't profits, this is embezzlement. It is legalized embezzlement, and it is an epidemic in this country's corporate culture. However, you take a company like Boeing, which is making airplanes, which, you know, fly tens of thousands of feet in the sky. They need to have multiple redundancies at every step of the way. They are, I think that the 777 had 4 million parts. The 37, I don't know, Ed would know this a little bit better, but we're talking about machines that have more than 1 million parts. It is entirely too complex for me to wrap my attention deficit disorder addled mind around. But I do know that you cannot run a company that makes something with 4 million parts like a mafia bust out, which is literally what Boeing has been doing. And that is because it has been normalized throughout corporate America. Mm. So it doesn't make sense when you look at it, when any normal person looks at it, well, in order to save $1 billion on this program that I'm going to use to pay for stock buybacks and line my own pockets with performance related bonuses, I'm going to do something that risks, you know, $10 billion in lawsuits from the loved ones of dead passengers. I'm going to do something that costs another, you know, $20 billion in delays and grounded aircraft, and it is absolutely nonsensical. And I think that is why why so many have within Boeing have been speaking out, because it doesn't, it feels crazy to be working in an organization like this. And the only way, and the only difference between Boeing,
sorry to cut you off. We have to let Ed go in about 4 minutes, and I just want to make sure we get a few questions in for him. let's go to Bob in Sausalito. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the show. Hi, Bob. Are you there?
Hello, I'm here.
Hi,
I'm here.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I'll just make this very brief. What we're talking about is the larger issue behind everything, and that is this constant, ongoing, rotating battle to eliminate, deregulate, to combat against regulation. Deregulation is the theme of one party, and if they're in there for 4 or 8 years, they do a lot of damage trying to put it back together. It weakens all the way along. So the deregulation, the regulation agencies that we were putting in place and putting into practice, giving them empowering through the late 40s, early 50s, through the middle 50s, have now been undermined to the point where they have virtually no teeth. They're literally dysfunctional. So unless we look at that bigger issue, safety or any related topic, is enforceable how? Through a random act of class action of one individual or a small group of individuals over time?
Thank you. This is a really important question, and I wonder what your thoughts are on this, Ed. I mean, you've testified in front of Congress. Where is the U.S. government on these issues?
The U.S. government is way behind the issues. They're just trying to catch up to the issues. You know, our foundation has come out very straightforwardly and said that MAX airplanes need to be grounded. There's enough issues right now to show that those planes are not safe. So that's an important step that needs to be taken, that DOT and FAA should be taken, but they're still trying to kind of band-aid this out. The steps that they've taken are completely inadequate. The regulatory oversight has been a mess, and I don't necessarily attribute it to any one particular party. I just know it has been deteriorating. So I agree with Bob's point there, is that this lack of oversight, this lack of, you know, really holding these companies accountable. And I mean, in every area, Congress, FAA, DOT, SEC, et cetera, until the government agencies hold these corporations accountable, until people go to jail for making decisions that end up killing people, we're going to continue to see these problems.
One of the only pieces I could find about government action at this point is, I'm reading from CBS here, Senator Tammy Duckworth is urging the FAA to take a closer look at how it responds to what she says is a pattern by Boeing of failing to disclose flight deck features of the 737 MAX to pilots. This is according to a letter to be sent today, obtained by CBS. Where is the outrage among other politicians about what is happening here, Ed?
Well, Senator Duckworth has been a leader in this area for some time. I mean, she personally understands the significance of this as a pilot, as a vet, as a combat vet. She understands that the concealment that's been going on, the lack of truthful information being passed, is unsatisfactory. It's completely wrong. I mean, just in the last month, we found out that the FAA has known, and the Boeing has known, that the MAX airplane has had uncommanded rolls. So you're flying along straight and level and say a cruise, and all of a sudden the plane banks sharply to one side. And the cause of that is the root cause of that is electrical wire bundles that were improperly manufactured and installed and are chafing. The wires are chafing. And so this is something that just came out in the shadows of the Alaska accident. And so these kinds of things that are happening, that Boeing's known about that at least until going back to July of 2023. And they haven't told pilots, they haven't told people that this is a possibility. Look, I went to the Naval Academy, and throughout my military career, we were told, you know, tell the truth. You got to tell the truth because lives depend on it. And my dad was a homicide detective. My mom was a nurse. They taught me that when I was young as well, because it's always worse when you lie and you things can happen. And so that's what we need to do. We need to be brutally honest with these issues, and we need the government to step in and do their damn job.
Before we let you go, Ed, do you think anything will change now that Dave Calhoun, the CEO of Boeing, is stepping down along with Stan Deal, the head of the division that makes planes for airlines and other customers?
You know, I've been probably the biggest critic of the Boeing company for the last 6 years. And I will tell you that, as I mentioned, I believe in the Boeing employees. I don't believe in the leadership. The steps that they've taken are cosmetic at best. I mean, Calhoun should never have been the CEO. He was on the board for 10 years. He's been part of this problem all along. The person who they just put in charge of Boeing Commercial Airplanes has no manufacturing or technical background as a finance person. Again, they're tone deaf. They don't seem to get it. The person that they just moved into the president of the board position, I was initially happy when I heard the individual had manufacturing experience. And then I checked the bio and I remember that he was in telecommunications and he made semiconductors. Big difference in building airplanes where, you know, people's lives depend on it. So I have no faith in the current leadership in the C-suite and the board. A lot more substantive changes need to be made. They need to put people in those positions that actually have experience in manufacturing, not just engineering, because anybody that's built anything knows, you know, design engineering is hard, but manufacturing engineering is way harder because you got to bring all those parts that you talked about, those millions of pieces coming together. And our union employees are the backbone of the company. And so the company needs to value those employees. And that's something they haven't. There's this elitism, you know, between the frontline workers and the senior executives. I mean, senior executives, believe it or not, they travel around in these Boeing business jets. These are kind of luxurious jets that they travel around in, and they don't think it's important to pay really a reasonable wage for these employees. They're not investing in their training. So there's a lot of issues here. This is way, way more complex than somebody saying, oh, this all happened because of the McDonnell-Douglas merger. This is currently stuff that's happening, and we just got to get real with what's happening.
Ed, do you have time for one quick question from a former pilot?
Absolutely.
Okay, so Carl writes, as a former pilot, I share the concerns about the erosion of the safety culture at Boeing and elsewhere in the aviation system. Particularly upsetting to me is the failure of Boeing to communicate important information to flight crews. The continued safety of air transportation is critically dependent on constant vigilance. Carl goes on to write, I agree with your comments, but I would like to hear a comment on the role of the media conveying a misperception of the current risks of flying. There are tens of thousands of flights every day in the U.S. by U.S. air carriers, and there's been one passenger fatality since 2000. Programs like this are very valuable, but the mainstream press plays up every ordinary incident. What are your thoughts on that, Ed?
Well, I agree with Carl that there's been a complete failure, and that's what Senator Duckworth has said about concealing information that pilots need to know about, flight crew need to know about. But as far as current risks go, you know, one of the things that you hear from Boeing and the government agencies is, hey, the MAX airplane has flown millions of miles safely, and there's been, you know, all these hundreds of thousands of departures, which is all true. But what they don't tell you, those metrics are useless. They're worn out old statistics because they provide zero insight into the individual quality of individual airplanes. So when you think about the safety of an airplane, you can't just say, oh, all these planes have flown all these miles and therefore everything is safe. Everything matters. The operations of the planes matter. The maintenance of the planes matter. I've got mechanics that are contacting us and telling us that the brake clips are breaking on a routine basis. There's been tons of hydraulic issues. And none of this surprises me because the company actually removed thousands of quality control inspections in their factories that had been in place for decades. And even though the union fought back to get many of those inspections back, they didn't get them all back. And there's been, unfortunately, as an example, there's planes at Alaska Airlines that are less than 2 years old that we've had over 50 safety malfunction reports on. So, yeah. Historically, everything has been fine, and the media hype right now that's going on is a little bit overblown at times. But I got to tell you that there's no pilots building those airplanes, right? And there's no engineers building those airplanes. Those airplanes are built by union employees that are skilled employees. And, you know, pilots have to assume that when they get on a plane, all the stuff that you can't see in the infrastructure of the plane, the wiring, the insulation, the plumbing, the avionics systems, all that has to be perfect, right? And pilots don't see that when they get on a plane. They can't see it. They have to do their pre-flight, but there's only so much they can see. So they have to trust that these planes are perfect. And what we're saying is these planes are not perfect. These planes have issues with them and they're brand new. If they're having these problems now, what are they going to be like in 10 years from now, 15 years from now when they're in service? Mm-hmm. So we got to stop just sitting on our laurels and saying, hey, the aviation's safe, no planes have crashed. Because what's going to happen, you know, they said that, and look what happened to the Alaska accident. That plane could have easily crashed. And so that's not the right attitude. The right attitude is we have to build high-quality planes, demand high-quality planes, and demand our regulators do their damn jobs.
Ed Pearson is Executive Director for the Foundation for Aviation Safety. He's a former senior manager at Boeing's 737 factory, where he was responsible for production system support for 737 commercial airplanes. When he spoke out about a number of safety problems, he was ignored by Boeing and federal government agencies. Ed, thank you so much for your work, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And coming up after a break, we'll continue speaking with Maureen Tasek, investigations editor at the American Prospect and senior fellow at the American Economic Liberties Project. We will talk about Maureen's latest piece, Suicide Mission, what Boeing did to all the guys who remember how to build a plane. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are talking about what it will take to ensure flying is safe and what it will take to hold Boeing accountable. Maureen Tasek is investigations editor at the American Prospect and a senior fellow at the American Economic Liberties Project. They work to address the crisis of concentrated economic power, which is so important. If you have any questions for Maureen about the lengthy investigation she did about Boeing, the strange death of a Boeing whistleblower, and then suicide mission, we're going to talk about that in a minute. But I also do want to ask Maureen about regulation. Any questions or comments about what's going on with Boeing, if you have any connections to flying? Thanks again, Carl, for your important email. We'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. So, Maureen, earlier in the show, Bob talked about regulation and deregulation. This is really important. Harvard interviewed a Harvard School law graduate, Ganesh Sitaraman, who wrote a book called Why Flying is Miserable and How to Fix It. He says that the problems plaguing air travel today stem from the 1978 decision to deregulate the industry. And, well, who did that? It was Jimmy Carter who signed that bill. I mean, it was a partisan bill, but he signed the Airline Deregulation Act. So have you done much research into this?
I am by no means an expert on airline deregulation, but I will say that Jimmy Carter was a massive deregulator across all sectors of the economy. Seems like he was a nice guy, but he, this was hardly isolated. There was a lot of financial deregulation in those days. And in general, that Watergate generation of Democrats was very pro-deregulation. So there was a notion that deregulating regulated sectors of the economy, and that is, you know, the trains and the planes, the transportation sector, you know, electricity, that this would somehow unleash the positive powers of markets. And in a lot of cases, it's been an abject failure. One thing about airline deregulation is that it incentivized lots of corner cutting. And prior to that, when industries are regulated, generally the profit margin that you're allowed to extract is capped. So there's not really an incentive to do much corner cutting, because the only way that you can expand your profits is by raising revenue. There is, I think, a good case to be made that certain a case that I certainly that I certainly agree with, that certain sectors of the economy are natural monopolies, and they need that kind of comprehensive regulation that caps the profits that you can extract from a given activity, and that also caps the losses that you can recognize. But in general, building airplanes is so complex, so capital intensive, that it cannot be, and so enmeshed in the military and defense sectors of the economy, it just cannot be seen as something that is a product of a free market. It's not. There's an incredible amount of subsidies that go into a company like Boeing. Half of its revenues at this point probably come from defense, and certainly the bulk of its profits come from the defense side of its operation. And its biggest competitor, its only competitor really in the commercial airplanes business, is Airbus, the product of a pan-European industrial policy that was created specifically and explicitly because they realized in Europe that if they didn't get into the airplane manufacturer business, that they were leaving all of this ancillary, manufacturing industry behind, that if they would not be, that they would cease to be, have a manufacturing sector in Europe if they didn't actually prove that they could successfully manufacture commercial airplanes. So it's important to recognize Boeing's biggest competitor is really, a product of a socialist project, a 30-year plan, really. And that is really important to drill home, because Airbus has destroyed Boeing in the past 10 years. And Airbus really needs Boeing because it actually can't keep up with demand. A lot of people want to fly. Airbus has order backlogs going stretching out to, I think, 2028. If you want to buy a plane, sorry, you gotta find a used dealer. There is just too much demand. So, but Airbus has not really experienced any of these problems. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that there is a mentality inside that organization that understands that this is not just any sector of the economy. This isn't about selling Post-it notes. That's what McNerney was, the 3M CEO, prior to, Post-it notes and Dave Calhoun was the CEO of the Nielsen Ratings Agency. So this isn't like that. Building planes is not selling cereal. Wow. And that isn't to knock, the complexity of consumer goods. But come on now, like, let's be serious.
Mm. Such a good point. Maureen, you wrote two very in-depth pieces about John Barnett, who worked for Boeing for more than 30 years. He retired in 2017, and he was giving evidence in a whistleblower lawsuit against Boeing, and he was found dead on March 9th. The Charleston County coroner said that he died from a self-inflicted wound, and police are investigating. You write that John Barnett was institutionally blackballed from the only company he'd ever worked for. For those that have not been following this, can you just tell us more about John Barnett?
Sure. John Barnett was one of quite a few, but probably many hundreds of Boeing long-timers who moved to Charleston, South Carolina when Boeing, the Boeing company, decided in a move that was entirely, done to bust the machinists union in Washington State, that they were going to build their final assembly line for the 787 Dreamliner in Charleston, South Carolina. This was a wild move. The 787 Dreamliner was a, you know, the first plane put together with primarily composite parts, so not steel parts. Most of the fuselage is made of composites. That makes it much lighter and much more fuel efficient. But composite, the way that it degrades, the way that it works, the way that it operates under these, you know, high pressure environments is not something that is known. It hasn't been tested. We know a lot about how steel works. And so it was a really risky, you know, kind of edgy proposition to begin with. And to move the assembly to Charleston, where there was virtually no aerospace workforce to begin with, was a wild move. So they needed, obviously, to send a lot of Boeing veterans down there to start training the workforce and training quality inspectors and sort of bring some semblance of competence to this operation. John was one of those. He is from Louisiana. He had a very distinctive Louisiana drawl, and they called him Swamp Dog or Swampy, I think, as a result of his voice. And he wanted to move back south to be closer to his family. He's a real family guy, and so he moved and took a job as a quality manager, and he was there for a couple years and you know, sort of brushed up against certain individuals. But in 2013, after I suppose that the plane was grounded, and then it was, or 2012 really, when after the plane finally kind of made its first deliveries, he comes up against these bosses, a succession of bosses, but one in particular who just hate him. They hate him because he wants to document everything. He wants to, that he insists on documenting in the Synergy software program that they used, all of the parts that are going on and off of a plane, all of the inspections that have been done, all of the work that's being done on the plane. He insists on doing things the old way. And they are insistent on getting the planes out the door, whatever it takes. And so he brushes up against this one particular boss. His first boss is actually removed. And they're also introducing, this is sort of a soft launch. It wasn't approved by the FAA provisionally until 2019. But in 2012, they introduced a program by which 90% of the things on the plane that were previously inspected by dedicated quality inspectors are now going to be self-inspected by the mechanics themselves. This is crazy. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to have, you know, machinists being responsible for their own quality assurance. It is very much like another layer of deregulation, but within the Boeing company. But Boeing was very insistent that this was the deal. And as Swampy articulated it himself, there was this idea. He was interviewed on TMZ, I think about 6 weeks before his death. There was an idea in the program and at Boeing that came, you know, that took hold, that quality was not value added. That's how he said it was not value added. It was just overhead, and any overhead should be eliminated. So because they couldn't get, I guess, the airlines to pay extra for quality, they were just going to strip it out. And what's interesting about that is that in 2014, Qatar Airways actually stopped accepting planes from the 787 facility in Charleston, because they had too much crap. There was, you know, foreign objects all over the engines. They things were shoddily done. You know, that there was they were using super glue to connect pieces of the airplane together. So it was, Qatar actually stopped accepting planes from that facility. So quality was value added,
right? Like if you have an important customer who's paying premium dollars for your new plane, and they're literally, you know, refusing to accept planes made in a certain facility, yeah, I think there's a case to be made that that quality is actually value added, but it is just such a part of this crazy mentality that took hold. So Barnett started collecting. He was coming up against just these sort of idiotic demands of management, that he stop putting things in email, that he stop insisting on documenting it when parts went on or off a plane. And one of the things that he captured really well, I think, is they wanted to switch from a system of entering all parts that were installed or uninstalled from an airline from an airplane. He wanted they wanted to change that to a spreadsheet system, but no one was actually entering the parts onto the spreadsheet. So they basically were not documenting it when they were taking a part off of a plane or putting or installing it on. This is, of course, what we've come up against in the investigation of 1282 of Alaska Airlines 1282. Nobody can figure out who didn't install the bolts that, you know, enabled the door plug to fly off at 16,000 feet. That is because there is a culture of not documenting things anymore, which, again, is really insane. It goes against decades of practice in the aviation industry. But Marine, what Swampy realized... Sorry.
We're almost out of time, Maureen, and I just did want to play a clip from John Barnett's family. That's Maureen Tasek, investigations editor at the American Prospect, who has written two in-depth pieces about John Barnett, who worked for Boeing for more than 30 years before retiring in 2017. He was found dead on March 9th. Charleston County police say that he died from a self-inflicted wound to the head. So let's hear a clip. John Barnett's brother Rodney told CBS Morning's Mark Strassman he became concerned when he transferred to Boeing's South Carolina plant in 2010. In this clip, you will also hear from John Barnett's mom, Vicki Stokes, and his lawyers.
What kind of problems did he tell you that he noticed
just
in the factory?
Quality issues, procedures that wasn't being followed, shortcuts that was trying to be taken.
Barnett claimed he was retaliated against for speaking up. He left the company in 2017.
He didn't go into a lot of detail, but I know he was like embarrassed at meetings. He would be called out.
Was his treatment at work, did it wear on him?
Oh, yes. That would wear anybody down after, I don't know whether it's 7 or 8 years.
In a whistleblower lawsuit, Barnett alleged a litany of safety concerns. Titanium shavings falling into electrical wiring, defective oxygen tanks, and managers urging him to cut corners. Robert Turkowitz and Brian Knowles represent Barnett.
The retaliation John faced was something he endured constantly.
He wasn't trying to hurt Boeing. He was trying to save Boeing. He saw this coming, and he said at some point, you know, this is all going to come down on Boeing.
In recent months, Boeing has grappled with questions about its safety culture, specifically repeated problems with its 737 MAX planes, including the mid-flight blowout of an Alaska Airlines door. Barnett worked on a different plane, but raised similar concerns.
What was his reaction to those headlines?
It wasn't joyful, I can tell you that. The whole thing was defying the flying public. He had their back. All these times, he's had their back trying to stand up. Get safety concerns straightened out.
CBS Morning's Mark Strassman asked John Barnett's family if they believe his death was a suicide. They said they will wait for the investigation to be done and carry on with his whistleblower lawsuit against Boeing. Maureen, we have just a couple minutes left. It's just so sad. I mean, of course, his mom broke down at the end and said, you know, if it weren't for Boeing, she'd still have her son back. I mean, it's just devastating.
Yes. So I don't really know what happened, but I will say that a lot of Boeing's ex-coworkers do not believe he committed suicide. A few things I have talked to, you know, as a journalist, I talk to whistleblowers on a regular basis. And what is unique about John is that, number one, he knew what he was doing. He documented everything. He never did what a lot of whistleblowers do. He never actually broke the law himself under pressure. He as a result, he was constantly reassigned. So he documented a massive range of illegal corner cutting that was going on at the facility. He filed his Air 21 whistleblower lawsuit within the 90 days, which is that's another story. But you know, a lot of whistleblowers don't do that. He also was not personally. I mean, he was in poor health. I mean, he was obviously PTSD from the experiences that he had of being retaliated against. But he was a fun-loving guy. He was loved by his bosses, tried to spread rumors that, you know, he was disliked by his employees. His employees loved him, adored him, respected him, and he had a very rich life. And that is why I think none of the coworkers that I've talked to or seen on Facebook believe that he actually committed suicide. He had filed his lawsuit in 2017. He had stuck it out all the way till 2024. He was in the home stretch. He had a court date in June. And so the idea that he would kill himself is just very baffling. It is very baffling. You know, he had issues, but nobody thought that he was depressed. And again, when you do something like that, you know, and whistleblowers do kill themselves all the time. I can tell you a lot of stories, but he was not at the point in his case where that would make any sense at all. Mm. So it is very strange because, again, you know, it suggests that somebody might have set him up, and that is crazy. Mm.
Maureen Tasek is investigations editor at the American Prospect and senior fellow at the American Economic Liberties Project. You can find the pieces that she wrote, in-depth pieces about John Burnett, including The Strange Death of a Boeing Whistleblower, at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us, Maureen. Thanks for your reporting.
My pleasure. Thanks
you.
For letting me talk.
Thanks to Savannah Harriman Pote for producing today's show, and thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.